This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you all so much for the support and for tuning in. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bobby K. Kraft. That's B-O-B-B-Y-K-K-R-A-F-T. And you are listening to episode 36. When you get a chance, if you like what you hear, it would be awesome if you rate and review the podcast on iTunes. This really does help because I would love the feedback. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Scott Felsenthal and Todd Massage to discuss their project, WhyMicrocaps.com. Since speaking with Scott on episode 10, he has partnered up with Todd to create WhyMicrocaps.com to, as they say, and I quote, do their part in helping to bridge the gap between the reality and the perception of microcaps, end quote. The goal for this podcast is to answer the question, why microcaps? And then discuss a few of their educational articles featured on their blog roll. Thank you again for tuning in to episode 36 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Please enjoy my interview with Scott Felsenthal and Todd Massage. But first, a word from our sponsor. Hey everybody, Robert Kraft here, your host on the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'd like to take this moment to invite you to join me and some of the guests you may have heard on this podcast to our annual Microcap Investor Conference, the Planet Microcap Showcase, April 26th through April 28th, 2017, at none other than the Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. The Planet Microcap Showcase will be 2.5 days of company presentations, networking opportunities, an educational workshop, and you'll get to meet privately in one-on-one meetings with company management of undiscovered and well-known microcap companies. There are a lot of surprises in store, and you're not going to want to miss it. So join us at the Planet Microcap Showcase, April 26th through April 28th at the Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. For more information, go to www.planetmicrocapshowcase.com and register now to reserve your spot. See you in Vegas. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I have Scott Felsenthal and Todd Massage on the program. They are the founders and editors of WhyMicrocaps.com. Scott and Todd, welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, man.
Dude, it's my pleasure. So thank you again for coming on. Now, as Scott knows, but Todd, you're about to be introduced. Every time my first question, it's, what is both of your backgrounds and how did you get your start investing in microcap stocks? So, Scott, we heard from you, but Todd, you go first and then Scott, you jump in.
Yeah. So, I first kind of got into investing in general when I was still in college. We had a money manager from Hartford, Connecticut that came in, taught us about, twice a week or so, and he's like a big time, value investing kind of Warren Buffett kind of guy. And I was kind of on this cool program where we got to manage about $2 million of our school's money or so, and that's kind of what really got me into investing. But from there I ended up going to work at Moody's for a few years, kind of in the high yield healthcare space, covering a portfolio of some small, kind of sketchy healthcare companies. But I got to learn a lot there about, one, just doing your real big time kind of due diligence on companies, working with a lot of different kind of deals and stuff because they were literally always acquiring each other. And then, kind of from there, I ended up moving over to a value-based kind of buy-side firm out in California. I think they managed about, $3 billion at the time. I was there for about a year before kind of going full-time on what I do now where, I teach college students and some adults about investing through my online program called the Invest Like the Street program to kind of give people that kind of hands-on educational knowledge you really need to really kind of learn a lot of this material kind of beyond the theory. And also kind of on the side, I manage some of my family and friends' money by investing in microcaps. So it's a nice little kind of flexible balance I got there, which I'm really, really enjoying.
And Scott, for those who may have missed our first interview, what's your background? How'd you get started investing in microcaps?
Sure. So my background, I'm one of those guys that when I was 12 or 13 years old, my dad set me up a little account and got to play around a little bit and made it through college. And in college was doing a lot of trading and then got into the real world and said, oh my God, I don't have time for this. So that's when microcaps became very attractive to me because you can, put in the time up front, do a lot of due diligence, but then you don't have to stare at your computer screen all day long like you did when you were trading. So my full-time job, I'm an executive with an international distribution company, and investing in microcaps allows me that flexibility to still be very involved in the markets with particular companies, but not have to stare at the screen all day long. And it's been a good balance for me, and it's been a really good way for me to get to know management teams at a lot of these microcap companies and really become a better strategic thinker and businessman as a result of investing. So it's a two-way street. It's helped me in the business world, and business has helped me in investing. Investing's helped me in business. So it's been a nice balance there, and that's why I really enjoy microcaps.
So I'm going to jump right in here, guys. You know, what is whymicrocaps.com? You know, as your mission states, it's, and I quote, to increase investor awareness around the microcap asset class, end quote. You know, I have to say, I think we have similar goals in mind here.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, when Todd and I originally started talking, we were talking about a company that we invested in and, you know, is mutual. The mutual connection was through that investment, and we never had Why Microcaps on our radar. But we quickly, through our conversations, became very frustrated that people just don't know about these companies and what can we do to help and what can we do to help expand the space and get it into the minds of investors, not only that are a little hesitant about microcaps, but some that maybe you've never even heard about them. And that's kind of how the Why Microcaps name came to the forefront, and we're just a month into the venture or so. But you know, the ultimate goal is to educate and to leverage all the sources we can, people like you and all the other people that are doing great things to promote the microcap world and really get it in front of investors that can understand that it's not a landmine. I mean, you got to do your due diligence and you got to do the prep work like you would for any investment, but once you do, there's some real hidden gems and great management teams and great products and great technologies you would never know about if you had no interest in the space. So our mission is spreading the word every way we can, content on our site, and just engaging with those that follow us. So Todd, you might want to jump into.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of the big picture here. You know, one thing I'm trying to focus on, you know, specifically for me is just helping educational-wise and really kind of teach, you know, people about, you know, how to kind of do, you know, the financial analysis and due diligence behind, you know, investing in microcaps, because a lot of times it gets a bad rap for a lot of the really kind of, you know, sketchy ones out there that end up getting in trouble. But, you know, if you're an investor and you know how to do your due diligence and go through kind of all the financials, you know, you could do really, really well, you know, especially if you're a personal investor who only has, you know, a little bit of money to invest. You know, you're the best place to do really, really well for yourself is in the microcap space, just mainly because, you know, a lot of really smart people aren't able to touch it because of how much money they manage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're actually just hit on my next question a little bit there, and you know, it really what it comes down to is, you know, why with all the negative press that microcaps get, you know, in the meet, not so much in our circles, but in the media, you know, with, you know, certain movies out there, you know, covering penny stocks, microcaps, you know, why do you think investors should then care about microcap stocks? You know, on the website itself, you had a phrase in there, and I wanted to know what you meant when you state, and I quote, "You can invest where the best and brightest on Wall Street can't." You know, why would anybody want to go where the best and brightest aren't?
Yeah, I can take that one. And this is something, you know, I believe in, you know, really, really strongly. But there's a good quote from, I think, Buffett, and it's one of my favorite quotes. And I don't quote things very often from big name investors like I see on Twitter all the time. But essentially the quote was, you know, if you give me $1 million now, you know, I can easily make 50% a year. No, I guarantee I can do that. And the reason is there's a big time structural advantage for an average investor to be able to invest in microcaps. Because if, you know, you're a money manager and you're managing billions and billions of dollars, you can't touch microcaps because they're just too small. And even if they double or triple or quadruple, it won't even dent your portfolio. So a lot of the smart money and a lot of people, that are on Wall Street, you know, they have to avoid the space just because, you know, it's too small for them. So as a personal investor, where you can invest in the smallest of microcaps, you know, you're kind of competing against, you know, the JV team, you know, versus, you know, the varsity all-stars on Wall Street who can't go there. So, you know, I'd rather go against the JV team all day versus some of the really smart people that are in large caps. And I think that's something that's really, really misunderstood by personal investors, just as it relates to microcaps.
Mm-hmm. So,
and what that really creates, Bobby, is it allows for, you know, a lot less, well, I don't want to say volatility, but a lot of more illiquidity, which at the end of the day means a lot of price dislocations where the fundamentals of the business in many cases are better than what's reflected, you know, on that ticker symbol. And that's where the opportunity lies. You got to hunt them down and do the work. But when you find one where you feel it's mispriced, you really, you know, my philosophy is you go big in it and you do the work and you know more than anybody about it and get the confidence you need to be able to buy when it remains volatile, if your thesis, you know, remains intact and, you know, take advantage where, to Todd's point, where others can't play ball, you can. And I think the more we can educate potential investors in the microcap world to understand and appreciate that, I think the more success microcaps as a whole can have.
Yeah, and I would even maybe even change that quote to being more like, you know, the best and brightest investors got their start, you know, investing in microcaps, and eventually, as you know, like your analogy, Todd, is they then got brought up to the varsity because, you know, they've made their billions and, you know, now are, you know, going after some of the bigger names. So it's not so much that that the best and brightest investors aren't looking at microcaps. It's more like the best and brightest investors, you know, once they've accumulated their wealth and really, you know, did well in microcaps, that's when they go and start these huge institutions managing billions of dollars, and they just can't at that point, you know. So is that like kind of a clarification of that phrase?
Yeah, that's perfect. And it's kind of funny because if you look at, you know, Buffett's early partnership letters, like he was investing in much more smaller, kind of sketchier companies back then, and he was loading tons and tons of money into some of these smaller companies that he really, really believed in. And I think what happens is, as you do really, really well in kind of the microcap space, you kind of graduate and you're kind of forced to go into, you know, some small and mid caps. But yeah, it's totally true. There's a lot of, you know, really well-known investors that, you know, started in the space, did really well, and then kind of just had to move on. So kind of, again, you know, there's always kind of that advantage you're going to have if you're always going to be, you know, a personal investor to kind of, you know, go in the space, because eventually the best and brightest leave.
So, you know, this question's more targeted for, like, you know, us millennials who are maybe just want to get started investing and don't really know much, but they're exploring all the different types of asset classes that are out there. And, you know, for them, you know, what can they learn, or we learn, from investing in microcap stocks that we otherwise wouldn't if we went right into, you know, midcap, large cap stocks, or even bonds?
I would answer that question by saying that we, as microcap investors, the largest advantage we have, particularly as young investors consider investing, is you have direct access to a management team that generally is very willing to discuss the business with you. You can't call up, you know, the CEO of GE or CEO of many mid-cap companies, maybe small caps and others, but micro caps with almost a certainty you can shoot an email and set up a call and learn more about the business and really kind of build a relationship with them that you just can't do in other cap levels. And that has been incredibly useful for me personally on the business side, because you learn these company strategies, what they're ultimately positioning their business for and how they're doing it. You kind of watch it play out through press releases, and you really learn the business that way, but you learn so much more. You learn real world, you know, kind of what Todd was saying earlier. It's beyond theory. It's real world stuff, and it's small businesses that are trying to maneuver their way through a very competitive business world to position their products or services in a way that allows them to one day grow from a micro cap to a small cap to a mid cap to a large cap company. And watching that play out is really, really exciting. And, you know, in my mind, that's a huge advantage for a young investor, where you can directly access the management team as opposed to, you know, talk to someone in investor relations, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I totally agree with that. You know, one of the biggest problems with the stock market, you know, these days is, you know, especially for millennials, and I'm kind of in that group, but, you know, a lot of people almost view the stock market as like a casino, where, you know, you're kind of flipping stocks back and forth, you're trading all the time, and you kind of forget at the end of the day that you're actually investing in a business, and that's kind of a big problem. But, you know, the nice thing that kind of Scott mentioned before about, you know, when you're investing in the microcap space is you literally can learn a ton about the business, and, you know, you have access to the management team who can literally teach you about the business. And you learn so much more than that, because then you kind of start to view the stock market as something different than just, you know, a place where you can trade real fast and maybe make some money in a day. You know, you kind of view it as, you know, where you could potentially be, you know, kind of like a partner with the company, and, mm-hmm. you know, an actual shareholder versus someone who just owns some stock in the Robinhood app for a day. Mm-hmm. And that's something, you know, well, hopefully we can get across through why microcaps is, you know, having people view their investments, you know, more as an actual investment versus, you know, just a quick way to make some money.
You know, and also as an idealist, you know, if you find a business that you truly believe in and, you know, you feel like it's changing the world, like you in turn are part of that change, you know, by supporting their efforts. And, you know, sorry, it's part of the reason I got into it when in college. So,
No, that's a great point, because at the end of the day, you're one of, I don't know, some microcap companies have as few as 50 shareholders, some have 300, but you're part of a, you know, generally part of a very small group. And to your point, if it's a company that goes on to do much bigger things, it's kind of neat to look back and say, wow, I was part of that initially. And that's where that ownership mentality comes in, where you're not just buying a you know, piece of paper, you're buying an actual piece of a business. And to see that succeed and to learn a lot about the business while you're holding shares of the company is pretty, you know, it's a pretty neat thing. And hopefully people understand that. And if they don't currently invest that way, hopefully it's something that they're open to, because it's a real neat experience.
Oh yeah. Especially.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, one thing that, you know, we were thinking about potentially, you know, working on it at my microcaps is, you know, helping companies kind of tap into the network of shareholders, because, you know, one of the biggest problems with some of these microcaps is distribution. And what better way to try to tap into a network and kind of utilize, you know, shareholders, you know, resources by, you know, going to them themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, if a company's selling something into, you know, car dealerships, for example, and, you know, they need contacts in the car dealership world, you know, why not kind of tap microcap investors and see who they have in their network and who could help the company out? Because, you know, if you're able to help a microcap out like that, you know, then you kind of feel like you're part of the story and you feel like you're a real shareholder helping out the company. So, you know, we're hoping maybe later down the road to try to find a way to kind of help make that connection and kind of fix that distribution problem that a lot of these microcaps tend to have. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now I want to go into a few of the articles that you've posted thus far on your blog. And the first question itself, it actually ties into what you guys brought up regarding, you know, doing due diligence and actually getting to talk with management. But, you know, sometimes doing that due diligence on microcap stocks, it can be a ton of work, you know, especially if, you know, you end up not investing in that company that you were researching, you know. So should investors interested in microcaps be concerned about the time commitment it takes to find that next multi-bagger?
My answer to that would be if you're not willing to put in the time, then it's probably not the right space for you because, you know, I say that from a couple levels. The first level is, you know, you should never blindly go into any investment. If you're going to put your hard-earned money somewhere, you better, you know, take the time to make sure it's something you believe in the future of. And that requires a lot of work up front. But I would also say if microcap investing is not making you smarter, it's because of what you're not doing in the due diligence process. Because that due diligence process, however it works for you, there's no formula. But that due diligence process, you should be learning so much about not only the company but the industry and things you've never even thought of before, that it's just a fascinating process. And at the end of the day, if you decide not to invest in a company, you still have, you know, the way I look at it is, well, I've learned a lot about something I would otherwise know nothing about. So what a win for me, even though I'm not putting a penny into the company. But at the end of the day, if you do the diligence and you put money into the company, you sure have the confidence that you understand the business model, that when things get a little volatile, like they often do in microcap world, you have the confidence to add to your position and continue to accumulate your position. And a lot of investors that don't put the work in up front, you know, can't say that with a certainty. And at the end of the day, they generally will sell out of panic or out of fear when you're buying out of confidence. And I think that is a huge advantage as an investor in microcaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think another interesting thing there, Bobby, is, you know, I kind of believe that you should really be putting due diligence into any kind of stock you're going to buy, you know, whether it's, you know, a microcap or a large cap. But, you know, the big advantage when you're putting that time and due diligence into a microcap is, you know, you really only need like, you know, 110 bagger to kind of make your returns for a couple years. You know, it could be huge. Whereas if you're putting the same amount into a large cap, there's really no chance you're going to get anywhere near the kind of returns you can get by doing solid due diligence on a good microcap company. And I think that's something investors should consider as well.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Todd, I'm gonna flip this one to you for your take on this. First is, you know, concentration versus diversification. You know, this is a topic that we've actually covered at length on the podcast. You know, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, man. I think the theory and stuff they teach in school, you know, kind of overly promotes diversification. And I kind of just view it as an excuse for just being a bad investor. If you kind of need tons and tons of diversification, you know, to kind of feel comfortable, then you're probably doing something wrong.
Laying the smackdown right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, a little bit. But it's kind of funny. If you actually kind of look at the math of how diversification can help a portfolio, you know, once you're beyond 20 stocks or so, it has a minimal impact on your portfolio, which is kind of funny because, you know, you'll see, you know, funds out there with hundreds of companies in one fund. I'm like, how can you possibly do due diligence on all of them? And I think that's another big thing there is, you know, okay, it's great. Yeah, sure, diversification can be nice, but there's no way you're going to have, you know, the time to put in the amount of due diligence you really should on 50 different companies. It's just not possible. There's not that much time in a day. You know, I'd prefer investing in a small companies that I know really damn well versus, you know, 50 I'm just kind of pulling out of thin air because, you know, maybe someone else brought them up. So I'm definitely more of a concentration guy, just mainly because I want to be able to be invested in things that I know really, really well, and that I have a solid idea of, you know, what could possibly go wrong. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, one of the biggest things investors need to focus on is the downside of a company. And, you know, the only way to really, really understand that is by, you know, doing the right amount of due diligence you need to. And, you know, obviously you only have so much time in a day, so definitely need to be more concentrated than, you know, overly diversified.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, what's your take on this?
Yeah, Yeah, I agree with Todd 100%. Maybe I take it to the extreme where, you know, from a concentration standpoint, I'm really, if I have more than four companies in my portfolio, I'm overwhelmed and I feel like I lose a little bit of control over what I know and what am I missing. So I, you know, four or five companies for me, and I feel pretty good about my portfolio. And if it gets beyond that, then I feel like, oh my God, I can't keep up. You know, that's just me. Some people can maybe have 15 companies in their portfolio and feel like they know them pretty well. But to echo Todd's sentiment earlier, I want to know them, you know, damn well and better than a lot of others, so that when the time comes to potentially accumulate more shares, I'm doing it with confidence and not because, you know, I'm bored or I need something to do. So I'm definitely more on the concentrated side, heavily on the concentrated side. And it's not for everyone, but for me, it kind of fits my philosophy.
That's funny you say that, Scott. I saw that tweet you put out this morning where if you're bored, you're probably doing something right as an investor.
That's right. So being bored is not a bad thing. And that's actually, you know, part of the reason why, as I was mentioning earlier, why I love microcaps, because I don't have to spend all day, you know, doing something or looking at the screen or, you know, I try to teach myself something new every day about every company I own. And if I do that, it might take me 10 minutes, it might take me 30 minutes, but if I can accomplish that, it's pretty amazing what you know in just a short amount of time.
Well, I had a quick follow-up to that, because on concentration versus diversification is, you know, let's say there's somebody, a microcap investor that, you know, just has so much notes that on the companies that they've done due diligence on. And, you know, let's say you have your four that you're invested in, but, you know, you have a watch list of like 20 that, you know, almost fit all of your criteria, but like, you know, they're just missing one or two things, but then eventually you might want to add it to the portfolio. You know, what would you say to those investors that, you know, might be in that way in which that they want to deploy their capital?
Yeah, I'm not sure Todd's point on this, but I think mine is, and this is kind of another unorthodox position, but I really don't keep a watch list. I maybe watch one or two stocks and, you know, kind of keep up with the company a little bit on the side. But my position's always been, if I have a watch list of 20 or 30 other stocks, it's just a distraction. And what I generally will do is will be set up a watch list, you know, set a few price triggers on a couple of the stocks that I really want to kind of get to know more. And then when the price, you know, kind of gets down to a level where it looks really attractive to me, I might dig into the business a little bit more. But I try not to let watch lists distract me at all. I try to stay pretty focused on what I own. And those times that I do get bored, I don't sell stock or buy stock. What I generally do is maybe turn to one of those watch list companies and just learn a little something about them. But I try to kind of ignore the watch list and just focus on what's in the portfolio.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat there. Like, I definitely kind of keep track of a couple companies, but it's usually because I'm just waiting for a better price. You know, I try to focus on the business first, and if I like the business and don't like the price yet, then I'll just kind of watch it for a while and kind of hope they have like a slip up one quarter where it might kind of present an opportunity to kind of jump in. But, you know, usually what I'll do is if I decide to kind of slowly get comfortable with something, you know, I'll usually buy kind of a starter position and kind of build up or average up kind of based on, you know, how they start performing over time. But yeah, you know, there's usually a couple I keep an eye on, but you know, I'm probably just not comfortable on the price half the time.
Hey, Todd, I wanted to actually follow up on that one thing you just said. You know, how do you figure out, you know, what's a comfortable starting position? You know, let's say you've done all your due diligence, you like the business, you know, where how do you figure that into your strategy?
You know, it's kind of tricky. You know, like, I'll first kind of judge it just based on, you know, just comparing different kinds of businesses and which I kind of think are less risky versus others. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I'm more of a downside guy. I try to figure out how the business can blow up first. And usually kind of the ones that I think are probably going to end up being the most secure, you know, those are the ones I'll kind of build into more. you know, there's, you know, for example, there's lots of like pharma and bio names in the microcap space. And, you know, usually things like that, there's no shot I could ever take a big position in because that's not exactly an asymmetric opportunity. You know, it can go through the roof, but it can go to zero just as easily. So usually kind of how I'll structure the my portfolio is just kind of based off of, you know, business quality. And then, you know, hopefully there's a good deal of upside there as well. But, you know, that's kind of how I'll end up concentrating it based off of how risky or not risky I think a business is.
Mm-hmm. So why are your worst investments the most important, you know, according to the article from your guys' website?
Yeah, I can definitely get into that one. You know, it's kind of funny, you know, you don't realize how much due diligence you should really do until one of your investments starts to blow up. And that's something I learned the hard way, and I feel like a lot of people have as well. Because especially if you're new to investing, you know, someone's going to tell you, okay, go do your due diligence. And, you know, maybe you'll do a little bit of work, you'll read some documents online, maybe go through its financials. But you really don't understand how much you should be doing until, you know, something starts going wrong with a company. Because then you start panicking, and then you're like, oh, geez, I need to read more on this, and then read more on this. And then all of a sudden you realize that you didn't do nearly enough due diligence in the first place, and you get a great learning experience out of it. So that's kind of how I view it, and I feel like it has happened to, you know, a lot of other investors, you know, as well as me, because you start to get into the weeds way more than you ever thought of in the first place, and it becomes a great learning opportunity, but a real painful one.
Yeah, it hurts at the time, but you look back on it as a good lesson, and hopefully, as Todd said, you take lessons away from it and put it into your future due diligence process as you kind of build that to what suits you.
Mm-hmm. So what lessons have you both learned from investing in microcap stocks? You know, Scott, what about you?
I'd say the biggest lesson I learned is don't trust a CEO just because he's saying something. You know, that hurt me early on where, you know, a CEO basically, you know, guaranteed X, Y, and Z, and the total opposite happened. And, you know, I was sure, I was completely ignorant to the fact that there wasn't any percentage chance that it wasn't going to happen. And sure enough, you know, what he was saying and communicating to shareholders was just a total fabrication. So that hurt me. But as a result, what I've built into my process is I will go back at least several years in filings and just kind of look at what management has said, and have they been able to continue down the path of what they've said, or have they jumped around from filing to filing in terms of strategy and business model, or have they kind of achieved what they said they have achieved? And, you know, if you can build yourself a pattern where you can look and see, you know, that a company has achieved what they said they were going to achieve 2 years ago and what they said they were going to achieve 6 months ago, it gives you a lot of more confidence and faith in the CEO and management team that you can take more of their words to heart instead of just kind of calling someone up, listen to what they say, and investing only to learn 6 months or a year later that what you were told is, you know, totally not the direction of the company. And at the end of the day, your investment is 20 cents on the dollar. And, you know, that was a hard lesson for me, but I think what's important is you learn from it and you put processes in place for the future where you can safeguard that to the maximum extent possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, that's definitely, you know, a good point. You know, it's definitely kind of more important to kind of, you know, bet on the horse versus the jockey. You know, there's a lot of real promotional CEOs in the microcap space. And, you know, one of the big problems, you know, when you end up talking to one of them is, you know, you can get biased instantly because you're like, oh, you know, there's a CEO talking to me on the phone. This is so cool. And then you're like, you're kind of feel like, oh, now I got to buy this stock because he talked to me on the phone. And all of a sudden you're real biased, and that can cause, you know, big time problems for sure.
That's a good
point. Yeah, you know, over time, you know, all the kind of mistakes, you know, I've made, you know, I've kind of compiled into a nice little red flags checklist to avoid certain things. Like, you know, you got to be careful on buying, you know, microcap too early. You know, a lot of them are, you know, burning through cash or something like that. And if you don't have a good kind of grasp on when that's going to stop, you know, you could easily end up getting in one way too early. And then, either things get worse or nothing happens for years. So, you know, things like that, you know, watching out for too much debt has always been one that's always come to kick me in the butt later on. they could look too attractive sometimes, but, you know, having too much debt can cause some serious, serious problems. And then, you know, you always want to find companies that have some sort of kind of moat around them. There could be a lot of microcaps that end up kind of creating products that a lot of other people can do as well, or, you know, more importantly, more capital-funded companies that are bigger can kind of just mimic. So you want to find companies that have products that are really unique, that kind of have some sort of moat around them, and that could really kind of take shareholders for a ride if they end up doing really, really well. But yeah, I guess that is the nice thing about, you know, when you make mistakes, you get some nice little red flags to kind of avoid kind of next round when you're looking at new ideas, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So one more question I got for you guys, you know, is what experience did you have that you can look back on for both of you in your microcap investing experience where, you know, it like you went through it and you're like, man, I just love this, you know, on both on the winning side and the losing side.
Yeah, I'll jump in. I think on the losing side, I think the scenario we just discussed, it didn't make me love microcaps, but it positioned me in a way that allowed me to maximize my opportunity to do well in microcaps, which has led to success, which has allowed me to love microcaps. So in an indirect way, bad experiences have led to the love of microcaps that I have. On the good side, you know, it's being able to, I can remember very, very early in my, you know, when I started to invest in microcaps, I really put a lot of due diligence into this company and really wrote out a really detailed thesis about what I think could happen and what could happen. And I mean, for a period of 10, 11 months, the progress of the company really followed my thesis. And that made me realize, A, that I did, you know, really good due diligence, but that B, there's something here. You know, if I could do it for this company, this microcap company whose business was not complicated, who was very easy to understand, and I could kind of build my own roadmap for where I thought the company was going to go, and it followed that roadmap, I think that gave me a lot of confidence in that scenario where I really loved the microcap investing journey, as I like to call it, because it's not a sprint. It's not it's a journey. It's a marathon. And I think having that process early on in my career really helped me embrace the asset class, because you can't look at a large cap company or even a mid cap company and be able to really understand the business deep enough where you can look into your own crystal ball and kind of see where they're going. And it's just a different phenomenon with microcaps. You really can understand the business, see the kind of strategic insight that the management team has brought to the business, and then kind of you just kind of visualize where they're going and build it into your investment thesis. And if it follows it gives you a lot of confidence to just kind of replicate that and keep looking for new ideas to do that too. And yeah, I think it's worth reiterating that to everyone that microcap investing, if you have any kind of short-sighted mindset, it's just not for you. I mean, you have to, what I tell myself is when I make an investment, I know, or I can expect to be in this company for at least 3 years. And, you know, sometimes things happen before where you need to get out, or sometimes things happen before where it's run up so much and it's just become extremely overvalued, you got to sell. But for, you know, my mindset going into an investment is 3 years is my absolute minimum. And that helps you kind of cut through the noise and not worry too much about volatility. And that's just kind of my point of view on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for mine, I guess kind of starting with the bad, you know, I guess the mistakes have kind of, you know, made me much more picky. You know, mainly because there's so many different, you know, microcaps out there, and, you know, you have so many different options, but, you know, it's kind of all the mistakes you make really, really make you kind of much more picky about kind of what you decide to invest in, and really, really only invest in the ones you know really damn well. And that you really think are going to do well. But, you know, kind of, you know, on the good side of things, you know, I came from, you know, my last couple jobs where I literally couldn't invest in microcaps. They won't let you, just kind of based on the employer. And, you know, all of a sudden, when I finally had the flexibility to start investing in some of them, you know, like I'm used to doing these like ridiculously, you know, detailed models at some of my old jobs. And it's really hard sometimes because some of these bigger companies have so many different segments and products and this and that, and they're nearly impossible to try to project out, or let alone get management on the phone to help you out. And all of a sudden, I kind of finally got the chance to kind of move down into the microcap space. And some of these companies are so much like simpler to kind of like project out, and you got management on the phone helping you. And it's like, wow, like I can get this down to like the dot, trying to predict what this company's going to look like a year from now. And then all of a sudden, once you start to get a couple home runs out of that, you're like, shit, you know, this actually works. So it's been a pretty nice experience, you know, especially for me, seeing as it's been a while since I actually had the opportunity to be able to kind of get in the space. And, you know, obviously, you know, what me and Scott are trying to do is to kind of get that word out there, kind of to get rid of that bad rap around microcaps and say, hey guys, you know, there's a lot of great companies out there that, you know, they may be small, but they're really, really great companies, and kind of more than just the scammy ones you see on TV all the time. So, you know, hopefully we can get that message out there over time.
Dude, that's the goal. So where can my audience go and find more information about you guys and why microcaps?
Yeah, check us out at whymicrocaps.com. You know, we'd love nothing more than engagement, whether that is, you know, comments on our post where we can interact, or directly emailing us. You know, we'd love to connect. And I'll also say, you know, if there are any companies that listen in here, one of our goals on the other end of the spectrum is to really help out microcap companies and to put them in touch with people that can help them, not for a charge, not for a fee, but we want to do it to just help the microcap space as a whole get connected to people that can lead to success. And Todd and I have been able to build up a pretty good network over the years, and we can put microcap companies that are, you know, struggling to get visibility or very frustrated because they see their business doing better, yet their stock, you know, just sits there because no one knows about the company. And it's frustrating and lonely, I'm sure, at times for management teams of these companies. But that's where we can kind of leverage our networks and the people we know to try to help them gain some visibility. So we'd love interaction. We love hearing from people that follow us, and we encourage that.
Yeah, and especially for, you know, a lot of the investors that are listening in, you know, we're trying to kind of make you know, a lot more resources to kind of make the job easier for you guys. So, you know, one thing that, you know, we put out recently is kind of, you know, real-time alerts on any news or filings that come out. So, you know, investors are able to kind of stay up to date on a lot of these companies. And we're also going to try to put out more educational pieces to kind of teach investors about, you know, how to really do that due diligence and how to get into the numbers and how to understand a lot of it to kind of really make, you know, the individual investor, you know, a lot smarter. So, yeah, you know, any ideas any investors ever have or things that they think we should add, you know, definitely reach out. You know, we'd love to hear them.
Well, Scott, Todd, thank you so much for joining me today. Have a great weekend, and I'll be in touch soon.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you all for tuning in to the Planet Microcap podcast, and thank you, Scott and Todd, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast. Go to podbean.com and search Planet Microcap podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet Microcap podcast. Stay tuned for the next Planet Microcap podcast, where we'll have our next guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, please send an email to info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of stocknewsnow.com, the official microcap news source, and the Microcap Review magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet Microcap podcast. Have a great week, everyone.